Ladies and gentlemen, it's Thursday. Football Scoop Podcast is back. We're here to talk about what is going to be a remarkable college football Saturday. We're going to learn a lot about a lot of what we think are very good teams, and we're going to figure out who's for real. About to jump right into that. I remain in mourning for Mike Gundy. That's all I can say about the mullet right now. Moving right along, let's jump into Friday night because it precedes Saturday. TCU Arizona State, gentlemen, we gonna find out something there.
Yeah, I think. I mean, TCU earned a key win by beating a solid SMU squad. SMU is not what they were last year, but they're still a good team, and TCU beat them, so they deserve the resulting credit. However, the way they won that game, I'm not sure was repeatable. So now you got to go. I don't know that they're as good as meets the eye. Now you got to go on the road on a short week. Typically, that's recipe for an upset loss. But I don't trust this Arizona State team either. Although they did go on the road and get a win at Baylor. But Kenny Dillingham said, we probably didn't deserve to win the game. I think they were -3 in turnovers and still won that game. So I don't think we can stand on solid ground about what we know about either one of these teams. But we'll find out a lot Friday night.
Yeah, I think TCU, to me, has proved a little bit more impressive, but it's hard to go against the home team. I'm really looking forward to that game. When you talk about we're going to learn something, I think we're going to learn about Florida State on Friday night. Like, Virginia is nice on offense. Like, Virginia is doing some good stuff on offense. Probably should have beaten NC State a couple of weeks ago. So, Friday night is a low-key good appetizer for what I think is going to be the best overall weekend of college football to date this season.
What is Tommy quarterback status for Florida State?
Last I saw was probable.
Yeah.
All right. So am I.
If Castellanos can't finish the game, then I don't think Florida State can finish off the Cavs.
And this, I mean, the hype for that Miami Florida State game at Doak Campbell next Saturday is already building. So the challenge for Mike Norvell and his staff is to get the guys to focus on this game and not look ahead to a Virginia team that JB said is better than their reputation implies.
I would agree. Virginia has beaten up some teams, but they've been some teams. Anyway, moving right along. Notre Dame is at Arkansas, early window. JB, give me some thoughts there.
Yeah, well, it's two really bad defenses with two really good offenses. And Talon Green is certainly the more experienced quarterback in the game. But CJ Carr just keeps doing some pretty special things each and every Saturday, especially for a dude playing ball for the first time in 2 years. And, you know, literally got like two snaps last year at Purdue and handed the ball off, and that was pretty much it. So, Notre Dame's had real defensive issues. Most people that listen know I live in South Bend. The unease is considerable around Chris Ash's defense. You also got All-American cornerback Leonard Moore, who is at best going to be a game-time decision for the Irish. They missed him last week, which is why Purdue in part threw up 30 points on the Irish inside Notre Dame Stadium. So I expect this game to be a shootout. I think the over opened at like 61.5 or 62.5. It's up to 64.5. And I literally don't know any of my degenerate friends who is going to bet the under.
I mean, the past two games, that Razorback defense has just been carved up with backup quarterback Trindade Chambliss at Ole Miss. Absolutely carved him up, and then Memphis got him last week. So I agree. Take the over, and both the defenses in this game have been ugly, but Notre Dame, I think, has at least showed flashes of promise, and it's been tough to see that against two quality opponents from the Razorbacks.
And the other thing, a note that I made on when I did a local podcast is that Arkansas does have a real life Julius Caesar Brutus situation brewing there. It's an open secret that Bobby. That if and when change is made, Bobby Petrino is already making the phone calls and already trying to position himself to be the interim. And he has experience as a head coach, and you're certainly not going to turn to your defensive staff to be the interim the way that the Hogs defense is or is not performing. So that's a subplot. Notre Dame likes to tout its culture. I think its culture will be tested this weekend because Arkansas can score.
Yeah, I can go into so many Petrino scenarios, but you mentioned Trinidad Chambliss. I was going to stay in the early window, but I'm going to transition us to LSU Ole Miss. I think that's one of those games where we learn a lot about how good a particular team is. In this case, I think it's LSU that we're going to learn about. Can they run the ball there? Can they stop a good offense? Gentlemen, thoughts on that one?
My question about this game is if he plays well and or Ole Miss wins, does Trinidad Chambliss become your permanent starting quarterback for Ole Miss?
Yes, he absolutely does.
Austin Simmons was the day one guy, thrown 4 interceptions in 56 passes. Chambliss has not thrown a pick yet. So he's clearly a professional college quarterback. And if he goes out and plays well in this game and Ole Miss wins, I think you're talking about the new hot name for a Heisman Trophy, which is the fact that he was in Division II last year, I think helps his story.
Agreed. And yes, I mean, if he wins this game, he's keeping that. He's in until he loses or in for a long time.
Well, and here's the other. Oh, sorry, Doug. Go ahead, buddy.
No, go ahead, JB. Go ahead.
All I was going to say was, like, if Ole Miss wins this game, then not only does he remain your starter, but you have 2 weeks to further tailor your offense for Trinidad Chambliss because you've got an open date coming up. And really, you've got 3 weeks because Washington State is a de facto open date right after that.
True. I mean,
nice. Not a lie.
LSU's defense has passed every test. They're not even giving up 10 points a game so far this season. They're barely below 10 points a game. Haven't given up more than 10 in a single game. But Clemson and Florida are not what we thought Clemson and Florida were going to be.
Yeah, and this is a real offense. Right.
Yeah. So, and Brian Kelly is clearly harboring doubts about his own offense, as evidenced by his answer a couple weeks ago. So I'm having a hard time, even though they're ranked higher, I'm having a hard time finding confidence that LSU is going to win this game.
Well, and I still want to hear from Doug. The only thing I want to add real quickly is, like, Ole Miss has been really good against the run, and LSU is disaster running the football. And so if they're further limited to complete one dimensionality with Nussmeier there and on the road, I think that's a recipe for bad news for the Tigers, even though I would contend Blake Baker should be an early favorite for the Broyles Award. Doug, I would love to hear your thoughts, and I again apologize for talking over you moments ago.
No, I think Kentucky has had Ole Miss's number the past 2 years, but the narrative around Ole Miss's offense after that Kentucky game is they were underachieving, right? They put up 63 against Georgia State, but they struggled against Kentucky. Trinidad Chambliss played a little bit in that game and led them on a field goal drive, I think, late in the game. And then in the two games he's taken over, 41 points and 45 points. Like, they found their guy. They would be silly to turn it over. He's thrown for over 700 yards, completing a huge percentage of his passes, and is a threat to run the ball all the time. So I'm firmly believe they found their guy, and how he performs in this week's game is critical to their future success, and could be absolutely agree. Could be a coming out party for the Trinidad Chambliss fans.
I'll be at this game, Ole Miss LSU. I expect Pete Golding's defensive line will stop LSU's run game, and then I think they'll pin their ears back and go get the quarterback. I don't think they're scared by LSU's offensive line. So it gives you a chance to gash LSU's secondary, maybe on a couple of big plays. I think Ole Miss might create some turnovers. I'm not sure who's going to win the game either. I think it's a toss up. I think there's I don't know what the right term is to describe the. I don't know if it's animosity. I don't think it's bad blood. I don't know if it's disrespect, but the coaching staffs, there's just something there. There's an undercurrent there, and it'll be very interesting to see that on the field Friday, Saturday in the ball.
I'm with you there. I think Lane Kiffin, I think he's – I don't think Lane suffers fools. And the head coaches that he chooses to pick on, the targets that he creates for his bullies, for his bullying tactics, if you want to call it that, is – there's reason behind it.
It's up. Yep.
Yeah. And I think I also think Lane knows that LSU has not quite accepted Brian Kelly as one of their own, even though he's in year four now. And I think I'm with you on that. I don't know. How does that affect the game on Saturday? No idea. But I'm picking up what you're putting down, Scott.
The want is there. The desire is there. Yeah, I just don't know how to describe it.
I'm just playing a little bad blood for you here. taking Zach's place with his normal Mean Girl reference and just throwing out a little taste whip bad blood there for you. I tend to agree. Zach, you're still harping on the Brian Kelly snack caking the reporter. You know, phrase the question better. I get it. But yeah, I think this could go a long way in the Brian Kelly acceptance. Because they helped spoil things for Ole Miss in the past, and this is certainly would be stamping LSU as authentic and, again, casting doubts about can Ole Miss be more than a really nice team and actually challenge for a playoff berth all the way to the end of the season. So go ahead.
But I would contend that LSU needs to win this game and their offense needs to be impressive in order for that narrative to change. If it does not, the same narrative kind of continues for another week.
Yeah. I mean, I see Scott nodding, and he's the mayor of Baton Rouge, so I'll certainly defer to him. But I think first and foremost, LSU fans just want to win this game, and then they'll nitpick about the offensive identity beyond that.
I think it's going to be a really good game. I think it's going to get decided, you know, late. Somebody's going to win the game. And I think that's going to kind of cement where these two teams are. They're in a dogfight every year. You know, if LSU were to come out and win by 28, 21, that changes the narrative. And that sets LSU up for a big, big season and kind of some pecking order in the SEC. But I don't see that happening. I think this is a dogfight. We'll see. All right. Talking about stomping people, Ohio State, Washington, same window. I think Ohio State stomps Washington. I could be wrong, but I'm talking about two touchdowns, 17-21, pulling away. That's what I see. Zach, feel free to tell me why I'm wrong.
So they don't have the longest ongoing win streak that belongs to Georgia, but Washington – if you judge by the baseline of how they play elsewhere versus at home, Washington has the greatest home field advantage in college football. They've won 22 in a row at home, including last season when they went 6-0 at Husky Stadium and 0-7 literally everywhere else, including a loss to Washington State 7 miles from their own home stadium against at the Seahawks field. So you have a lot of Ohio State team that – has basically been off the radar for 3 weeks. This is going to be their first real road, their first road game period. It's their first road game in 9 games after 9 straight home or neutral games. I think Washington keeps this one close throughout. I don't expect Ohio State's offense to go in there and just roll through this Washington defense. And I think it's closer than the experts think.
I would be.
Are you calling me an expert?
Yeah.
I'll take it. Moving right along. JB?
I would be stunned if the Buckeyes don't cover in this game. And it's a 7.5 point line. I know Washington is complete Jekyll and Hyde, home versus away. The TV gurus did the Huskies no favors by making this a 12:30 local kickoff. I think that drastically mutes the or neuters, since it's Huskies neuters their home field advantage. And I just think Ohio State's defense is again going to carry the day. There's still going to be some growing pain, so to speak, for Julian Sayin along the way leading this Ohio State offense. And we might see some of those on Saturday, but I still believe that the Ohio State defense is why Ohio State will control this game.
I think Sayin's going to impress. I really do. I feel like Ohio State's about to break out in a big way. Not, I mean, they're number one team already, but I think they're just about to just start stomping dudes. We'll see. All right. Auburn beat Oklahoma in real life, but they got a W because of their officials. Whatever. Texas A&M, they go to Kyle Field. That's a battle. Auburn's got a tough road here. Can they find a way to beat A&M there?
They can find a way if they turn over Marcel Reed. And if you give him a chance, he will throw it to you. He is the epitome, in my opinion, of feast or famine. Again, I saw him in person a couple of weeks ago in South Bend. He only completed 17 of 37 passes. Like, I'm very math challenged, and I know that's sub 50%. But he did that for 360 yards, average 21.2 per completion. So if you can limit some of those big plays by a really, really good Aggies receivers core, you will have a chance to pick him off. And I think that's the recipe for Auburn. I think Auburn has to win. Turnover battle probably has to be +2 to have a chance to win this game.
Yeah, Jackson Arnold's issues are so well set. No team, obviously, he didn't take every snap last season due to his own lack of performance. But no team in college football last year took more sacks than Oklahoma. And then this year, Auburn so far, after taking 10 on Saturday, is like 3 from the bottom again. So there's one common denominator between those two. And so I don't know how you can if Hugh Freeze hasn't fixed that by now, I doubt he can do it in 6 days going into Kyle Field. So I think you have to craft a game plan around him where you get the ball out or you take off and run with it. And obviously Texas A&M is going to be well aware of that. I agree with JB. If Auburn doesn't win the turnover battle, I don't see any way they can win this game. I think they have to do a better job of helping their quarterback, because their quarterback is a plus college football player in many aspects, but he just does not process fast enough on his to win a game on his own.
He's completed just over 50% of his passes, but his touchdown interception ratio is 9 touchdowns to 1 pick. So there's two things that lead directly to wins, right? Turnover margin and explosive plays. And they've got explosive plays, as JB has said. But that's the tough part to factor in with this one is 50% completion is not great, but they're for big chunks of yards. So that's working in their favor.
Yeah, and his touchdown interception ratio is so good because he holds onto the ball so long. He doesn't give himself the opportunity to throw interceptions.
Yeah, but he's got 8 running down the sideline wide open on just about every play, and he's going to win he's going to win 90% of 50-50 balls. Just throw the ball to 8. Mm-hmm. It's pretty easy. He's pretty good. He's a difference maker. Throw him the ball. Anyways, talking about throwing him the ball, well – or run the ball, or do whatever you want if you're playing Illinois. Indiana is taking on Iowa. They're up in the Hawkeyes grill. Coach Parker will have something to say about that Indiana offense. We'll see how that goes. I think this is a fascinating game. I kind of wish I could watch this one, but I'll be at Ole Miss, so probably won't be able to watch this one. Thoughts, gentlemen?
Yeah. Champagne problems for you. We feel real bad for you, Scott.
I saw the line this morning. The line started at Indiana -4 and it's now jumped to Indiana -8. I would still take Indiana -8. I know if you're Indiana, you run the risk. You just beat a top 10 team by 53 points. But so far, Kurt Cinetti has hit just about every right note in his year plus on that job. So I think he'll have his team's attention. And I think Indiana goes and wins by 10-12.
I mean, Indiana, you could argue, is the hottest college football team in the country now, coming off a dominant performance last week. Kurt Cinetti, one of the hottest coaching names in college football right now. You go to Iowa, who's always known for their defense. Their offense has struggled mightily again this season. And to me, you got Bryant Haynes for the Hoosiers calling the defense and a great defensive staff. It's going to be hard for Iowa to move the ball and keep up with this Hoosiers offense.
Yeah, and this is the opportunity. This is the type of game that Indiana never had a chance to win last year just because it wasn't on the schedule. And so their schedule got knocked all year long. Mm-hmm. They didn't have this kind of game. You still get a lot of equity if you're Indiana and you go on the road and handle your business here. Iowa people, and I picked them as my bold prediction, the Hawkeyes Nation was so fired up for Mark Gronowski coming in as quarterback. They thought he was going to fix a lot of their offensive ails, especially with Tim Lester in year two as the offensive trigger man there. And I think the adjustment has been pretty rough for Gronowski. He has adjusted more slowly going from FCS to P4 than what has Doug's guy, Trinidad Chambliss, going from D2 to the SEC. And I think that's the difference in this game, is that we'll have to see Gronowski lead Iowa to a win. And I'm not sure that he can do that against Bryant Haynes' defense. That to me is the seminal matchup in this game, is Gronowski against the Iowa defense, or excuse me, against the Indiana defense led by Bryant Haynes. And I think that's the difference, because I think Iowa's defense will perform pretty well. And I think Mendoza will find some issues against the Hawkeyes defense. And Iowa has had one extra day of preparation. For whatever that's worth, Iowa's coaches got to sit and watch Indiana live last Saturday because they had beaten Rutgers on the road on Friday night.
There's a 100-spot difference between these two offenses in yards per play, 8th versus 108th. In real terms, it's more than 2 yards per snap.
Oh, God bless America. God bless Iowa football. I have a favorite website, gentlemen. It's called footballscoop.com. On Football Scoop today, there's an article published on called The Inside Scoop, Big Ten Coaches Jobs. A little bit of inside scoop on Kurt Cinetti. It's an interesting read for those who are interested in that kind of thing. All right, JB, thinking about, I don't know the right terms, a trap game, but Tennessee is at Mississippi State, the vaunted Stark Vegas, Cowbells annoyance. You feel good about the ball, sir?
I think Tennessee will handle business just because Joy Swaggs is that guy. And I talked to an NFL coach yesterday who said he had watched Tennessee already on film and said they're so much better than anything we saw out of the Vols offensively last year with Nico. And he's like, they're back to doing stuff. He said, I don't know if that means Heupel is back to calling the offense full time or if he's just turned Joy Halsey loose to run the offense as he sees fit, and plus they have that much belief in Joy Aguilar. But the Vols are lucky this is not a night game. I talked to somebody else this week with direct connections to UT who said that if this was a night game, they felt it would almost be a toss-up and almost a pick'em, that the line would probably go from Vols -7.5 to Vols -1.5. And so and then you have the subplot of the Jeff Levy, Josh Heupel connection and their longstanding friendship. So each side is going to know the preferences and the tendencies of the other side. Once again, this is a game where I think the Vols have to get off early and silence the Cowbells, literally and metaphorically.
Let me set the scene for you guys on this next one. I'll be rolling out of the vault. I don't know if LSU's won the game or if Ole Miss has won the game, but I'm heading to the vault. I'm sorry, I'm heading to the Grove for a little post-game party. I'm pretty excited. And you know what I'm going to do when I get to that post-game party in the Grove? I'm going to watch Oregon, Penn State, Alabama, Georgia on multiple screens in the Grove. God is good. I can basically just leave the podcast right now. I'm in a joy-filled place. Life is great.
For those that aren't watching on YouTube, you can actually see Scott is levitating. He's got this angelic glow.
Imagine, all the on him. Imagine this. This is incredible. Just Ole Miss LSU is over, back in the Grove. Multiple screens. There's screens everywhere. Parties everywhere. Beautiful people everywhere. Holy smokes. And I'm not lying or I'm not elaborating. I'm not exaggerating. This is everything. This is America at its finest. Go on, gentlemen. Sorry.
Nothing gets more America than an Oregon Penn State Big Ten game.
But it's a great football game, so let's do it. Contrasting styles. Everything's different. Everything's coming together. One team has to win. And this is one of those we find out who's real.
Yeah, the contrasting styles in Oregon Penn State is Oregon scores points and Penn State doesn't.
There's other things we could say as well. But, Zach, go on. Elaborate here for me.
So, in his losses as a starting quarterback, which have come exclusively to top AP top 11 teams, Drew Aller is a cumulative 91 of 186. It's below 50% for 1,063 yards. That's less than 6 per attempt, with 6 touchdowns and 6 interceptions. Those numbers are equal across 6 games. And there are arguments to be made that, well, he needed an upgrade. He didn't have enough help. Well, you're in year two under Andy Kotelnicki as your offensive coordinator. You're in you upgraded your wide receiver core. Well, but didn't he play good against Oregon last year? The offense played good in that game where Penn State ran for 300 yards, scored 37 points. Passing the ball, Aller was 20 of 39, 226 yards, again, below 6 yards per attempt, 2 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. He just hadn't been good enough in these games to win. And if you are who you're supposed to be at home, at night, 2 weeks off, you've been preparing for this game in one form or another for 6 months. If you're that guy, you find a way to win this game.
Zach, I'd pause you for a second and say, you could have just said that about every Penn State quarterback for the last 15 years. They win all the games they should, and then in the top 10 game, your games against top 10 opponents, the quarterbacks just don't show up. I mean,
except for Trace McSorley, who was not a typical – he was a baseball guy or that was like 6 foot flat, not an NFL prospect whatsoever, but he was a great college quarterback, and he elevated the Penn State offense. The remainder of these guys are 6 foot five statues. I know Aller can move a little bit, but they're statuesque quarterbacks that don't elevate the offense. Doug, go ahead.
The one thing we have to talk about with Trace McSorley, who was he handing the ball off to? Saquon yes. Barkley. I could have been an elite college quarterback if I was turning around and handing the ball off to Saquon Barkley 25 times a game, right? Christian Hackenberg okay. can't name the running back during that era, and this year Penn State has a really good running back that should be able to help Drew Aller stretch the field horizontally and vertically, and they have not done that.
Find me a team. There are not a whole lot of teams that have spent more on wide receiver, offensive coordinator, and running back than Penn State has.
And they have two really good running backs worth noting, Nick Singleton yeah. and Catron Allen. This is where, even though he doesn't want to hear it, and we know I'm convinced that James Franklin is a Football Scoop podcast listener because James Franklin is smart. This is the part he's not going to want to listen to. He's 4-20 all time against AP top 10 teams. And this includes a 3-10 mark at Penn State when both teams are ranked in the top 10. If you're 50%, you're fine. If you're 6-7 or 7-6, you're like, okay, James Franklin is a toss up in a big game. But when you're 3-10, that's really bad. That means one out of every four approximately is what you win. You're not close to winning half of them. This is much like the Ohio State game last year, whiteout inside Happy Valley, everything seemingly going Penn State's way. The narrative will be this coming out of this game. I think Dan Lanning is maybe the best coach in college football, or Andy Kotelnicki has his moment and Drew Aller elevates his game and it's not the same old Penn State. It will be one of those two things.
I agree. Going to be fun. Alabama's at Georgia. Sounds like a good football game to me.
I think Georgia's going to win handily.
I love the blunt.
Yeah, Georgia minus three and Georgia minus 3.5 might be my favorite bet of the whole darn weekend. And I don't bet, but Jess Bryce likes to dabble. So I'm outing her right now. She wanted to do a Major League Baseball parlay last night. So just so you're aware.
I agree with John. Alabama's 9-1 in this series in the last 10, and that includes a 1-6 record for Kirby Smart against his old team. But to me, the most awesome sight in college football is when Georgia needs to score a touchdown. They transform into something supernatural, and it would take the Philadelphia Eagles defense to stop them. When they have to have it, they go get it. And I know they lost on the road at Alabama last season. We don't need to rehash that game, but a lot of that was Jalen Milroe's, the exploits that aren't going to be repeatable on Saturday. So I think Alabama will have some success throwing the ball on Georgia. I don't expect it to be a blowout by any means, but I think I like Georgia to establish its dominance maintain its dominance across this conference and beat Alabama in what's been a once a decade type event.
And let's remember last year that Georgia was just absolutely blistered and left as roadkill through about three quarters of that game, and then came all the way back to take a lead. And Alabama had to get the miracle Jalen Milroe to Ryan Williams connection in order to win the game, maybe like 40-34 or something like that. And they had led commandingly by double digits for almost the balance of that game at home, and Georgia came all the way back. I just think all of these factors in Sanford Stadium, with the dogs barking and the shakers waving in between the hedges, is going to be too much for Alabama.
You know, it's funny. Ryan Williams vaulted to stardom based off that catch. But ever since then, I don't think he's lived up to his rival to Jeremiah Smith type paper. He's not Alabama. I mean, he's not the best receiver in college football because he's not the best receiver on his own team. That's Jeremy Bernard.
Well, and also in fairness to Ryan Williams, is he's had a lot of injury issues since that time. So he hurt a knee or a hamstring or something not long after that and was severely hampered, and I think has had that bother him again a bit more. So yeah, it's Jeremiah Smith and everybody else for sure. But in defense of Ryan Williams, he's not been 100% healthy every week. And then also Jalen Milroe couldn't always find open receivers the rest of the last season, which is why Alabama also so vastly underachieved.
But in that Florida State loss, he had 5 catches, 30 yards. He did go off against Wisconsin, but he was not a difference maker in that Florida State loss.
It's always fun to watch this game for the offensive and defensive line battles. I mean, you got grown men out there. It's just fun to watch. This is SEC football right here.
It's NFL light. In the trenches, what has defined Alabama and Georgia in recent years is that they have been the 33rd and 34th teams, so to speak, from an NFL personnel standpoint in the lines of scrimmage. I see Doug nodding his head. I like it best when the head coach agrees with me on this podcast.
It means General, we're 30 plus in. Any games y'all want to touch on before we wrap this thing up and I start preparing mentally for the Grove? Because clearly I'm there already.
I'd like to touch on USC Illinois.
Yep.
I'm interested to see what Illinois has after face planting in Bloomington. And I saw Lincoln Riley bring this up, and you know, Lincoln Riley loves to complain, but at the same time, I do think he has a point here. So USC played Saturday night at 8 p.m. local time, and now they got to go on the road and play a game that begins at 9 a.m. body clock time. Do we think that's a real factor here in this game?
I think it's yes, I think that's real life. That is, your body is dealing with that. Yeah, he's not wrong with that. I mean, I don't know that I would complain about it big publicly, but he's letting the world know that's something we're dealing with here.
A couple of big ACC, Louisville, Pittsburgh is an intriguing game. It's this Louisville team very similar to the previous two iterations under Jeff Brohm, or is it going to get exposed a little bit by Pitt? Pitt's already been exposed by West Virginia, but still has a lot of talent on defense. So that's one. Kansas hosting Cincinnati. That's a low-key big game for that conference because Kansas has one close loss on the road to an SEC team. Since he hasn't played much but is undefeated, it's obviously a huge year for Satterfield. So those are two other games that I'm super intrigued by. And then there's one late-night game I wanted to see. I'm scrolling here.
Colorado? BYU,
man. Yes, Colorado, BYU. Golly, get out of my head. But yes, that's a big game for a bunch of different reasons. Much like the ACC, I think, really needs Louisville to go ahead and beat Pittsburgh this weekend. I think the Big 12 needs BYU to be able to handle business at a Colorado program that doesn't have much offensive identity right now.
Speaking of the Big 12, my eyes will be Utah and West Virginia. West Virginia's kind of been a Jekyll and Hyde situation that I think they're both trying to find their identity, especially Utah after getting thumped by Texas Tech and just physically manhandled in the trenches. So both these teams are looking for who they are and to get back on track. And with Utah's, you know, vaunted offensive line that I know JB's talked about a number of times over the past few weeks, are they going to be able to impose their will on a hard edge West Virginia squad that again, they continue to search for who they are. So my eyes will be on that one.
I'm interested in UCF, Kansas State. I know Kansas State has looked like the most miserable team in college football, but their schedule, their first month schedule probably felt like 6 months when living in it. Obviously tough. You go to Dublin and lose a game you easily could have won. No, there's no shame in that. And then you got to come home, play the next week, barely win. And then you got to go turn around and play Army. It's never fun to play Army, but it's especially not fun when you're playing a third straight week when flying cross country or cross continent and back. And then you had to go on the road to on a Friday night conference game at Arizona. That's not setting them up to succeed. So you've had two full weeks off because you played that Friday. I'm interested to see if this looks like a new team and what that staff was able to do to refresh guys that clearly needed some time off.
Yeah, that sounds brutal. I would agree.
Real quick, at the FCS level, not necessarily the sexiest game of the weekend, but Tennessee Tech is off to a 3-0 start for the first time since 1977. Program builder Bobby Wilder doing some really big things for them. They make the short trip down the Cumberland Plateau from Cookeville to Nashville to face Tennessee State. It's a conference game. These are not your Eddie George Tennessee State Tigers of old. Tennessee Tech starts 4-0, man. They're just absolutely cooking. They've got Kentucky late season. Who knows what shape Kentucky will be in by then. But if you're an FCS fan like I am, check the box scores for Tennessee Tech on Saturday.
Amen. Good stuff. Gentlemen, Sunday, you guys will be back. I'm not going to be on this Sunday. Once again, I apologize. With some awesome recap, doing work. JB, well done. Let's all go out there and make it a great college football weekend and high school Friday night. Doug, good luck, and we're out.